Another installment of Parhesia Hour. I'm your host, Kern Haug, and are joined, continue to be joined by Stephen Lee Clark.
Hey, what's up?
Today's topic, we're going to try to cover many things, and I'm hoping in doing so, create a somewhat of a structure for the future. What am I talking about? I'm talking about overthinking and underthinking, the merits of both. When does it help to think a lot about a thing? When does it not help to think a lot about a thing? And in contemplating this subject, I gathered some music of folks who seem to do a really good job of sort of turning off and having no perceivable filter between their brain and, let's say, their hands or their voice.
Their instrument,
yeah. Exactly. And kind of learning from that and getting into a bit of what allows that, what's gained from it, and how that can kind of generally be applied elsewhere. So to start that, I thought I'd listen to a bit of Charles Mingus's recording called Mingus Plays Piano, which was recently reissued by Superior Viaduct, which is a Bay Area label. And yeah, I like that they reissued, because this was just a thing I would listen to on YouTube for a long time, because it's just like the full album's on YouTube. And now you can buy the record of it if you want. And so yeah, we'll get into that a bit and come back and start discussing things. And to test some of the ideas we're putting out, we're gonna not be overthinking this episode too much and just kind of go and see where things go. And if you'd like to participate in the discussion, I've put the created a Twitter account, Parhesia Hour, so just at Parhesia Hour, that's Parhesia, and feel free to tweet at us and we'll read it and incorporate that into chatting. So we'll get into this music a bit and then come back to you. So yeah, it's Charles Mingus going for it. Apparently it was after, it was put out after he recorded The Black Saint and the Sinner Lady or something, just like a big album of his. And mm-hmm. I feel like it kind of sounds like this sort of like relaxing out of like...
Like wind down?
Yeah.
Totally.
Which I really like, that the knowing that it's sort of just kind of, that it is like a, just improvise, it's sort of this like very, I was thinking about it yesterday, sort of this kind of like honest thing where when someone's just letting it come out, you're like, oh, that's like really what they're feeling like. Like, this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I was realizing I can almost like trust it more, sort of, in that instead of it being like a manipulation, like, are you manipulating my feelings with this music that you're doing?
And it's like, not as plotted out as like a long process thought out like recording.
Yeah. It's sort of just this very like, okay, this is like what you're thinking about and what's going on right now, and that's cool. I don't like, there's nothing to overthink, because it's coming at you saying like, this is it. Like,
well, it's also what we're talking about, underthinking.
Yeah.
So it's a removal of your body as a middleman, and it's just your thoughts straight to the instrument.
Yeah. And I like that, I think, yeah, partially because I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I feel like I'm free to not try to put too much on it. Like, I was around someone yesterday and they were like, look at that ribbon, like, sculpture. I wonder what it means. And I was like, man, I don't think it, like, I think that's the wrong way to think about
it. Yeah.
I don't think it means anything. It's like, it's pretty.
Or it could mean something to someone, but it's not going to mean the same to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's where it's your job as a observer to just be comfortable with what it means to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like to be able to like sit back and be like, I can take this and like do with it what I want, mm-hmm. I guess. And feel free that like that's, and that's okay. There's not a right or wrong answer, which I love about like the arts in general. I suppose
it's the best part about it.
It's like I can always be right as long as I can argue myself. I suppose that's where the usefulness of thinking can come in, like a sustained thought. I saw some quote somewhere that was like, nothing can withstand the assault of sustained thinking, and I was like, that's pretty tight. To like, it seemed optimistic. Like, if we can just hold on to this for a while, like keep this, hold this in our mind, like we can make some progress.
Yeah, it's that, or like the consistency of thinking and problem solving.
Yeah. And I guess I'm sort of hoping to sort of figure out like, come with some like structures of sort of, what are the moments in which kind of letting things come together are useful, and when it's like, okay, no, I need to like, I can't just let this be like a bout of inspiration and like that's all that comes from it. And here, I think in this Mingus thing specifically, it's kind of titled Spontaneous Compositions and Improvisations, which sort of, I was like, is that redundant? Like, you know,
that's what I thought at first too.
Yeah, it seems redundant, and I'm like wondering why make the distinction. And I like spontaneous compositions is maybe he used them as compositions later. And I sort of trip out on that sometimes, in that like anything you wrote, you kind of improvised at one point. Mm-hmm. Like there was a point in time where you didn't know what you were doing and you just came up with it. And like a lot of the times it's when it kind of comes out of nowhere and you're like, that's cool, I'll repeat that. And I'd say, I guess like the more knowledge you have, say of music, the easier it is perhaps to expand upon that. Cause you're like, mm-hmm. I know what key to continue playing
it. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where the preparation happens. Cause we kind of got on this topic first, is like just kind of talking about like that moment where you've done all this preparation and you've like thought about a thing a lot and like really like trained and practiced perhaps, but then things sort of shut off.
Yeah. The brain functions just shut or like slow down immensely.
Yeah.
And it's time for your reactive, everything you've put in your mind to just come out in an action.
Reactive.
Yeah. I think we used the other night when we were talking about this, we used like a baseball player as for an example, where he's trained and been taught his whole life to hit a baseball, and so he has all these like logical calculations going on, firing off in his brain all at the same time, a lot of activity. But when the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, the brain just quiets out.
Yeah.
And they've measured this with electrodes, and the brain will quiet down, and it's consistent every time, and then it's just time for action. And so it's kind of weird. It's a balance thing, overthinking it and subconscious, or like overthinking it and doing all these calculations in your mind, and then at the last split second, it's the opposite. It's just reaction, not overthinking, and it's more of like a subconscious calculation. Yeah.
And I sort of love that when you are in that moment of like having to perform, like react, and say you haven't prepared, like say it's something you like have minimally prepared for, but like you just have to rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, you kind of had a, like an example I sort of liked about your bike.
Yeah, the biking thing. I was
like survival.
Yeah, totally. I was riding with one hand and a coffee in my other hand, and I'd never, like, I had to slam on my brake with one hand because a car cut me off, and like kind of turn to the side, but all the while using one hand. And I'd never done it before, and I just did it naturally and in my mind at that moment, because it was so like on the spot. I subconsciously like calculated a bunch of things, like the angle at which I should lean and the angle at which I should slide my back tire, and somehow calculated like the amount of friction between my tire and the street. And it was all very reactive, and I've never done it before, and I survived. It was totally fine. Yeah. And I barely like avoided being hit by this car, and it was all spontaneous like reaction. And I was thinking like, man, if I ever was just riding down the street and decided like I'm gonna slam on my brake with one hand, and like I don't think I could do it. Seems pretty hard, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the perfect example of like in the moment, like making all these subconscious calculations. And that's what we were talking about. Maybe it's some sort of like survival instinct, and maybe that reaction where the brain in a split second where the brain shuts off and lets your body do the work and the calculating, maybe it's like a survival thing. And it used to, and it like stems from, you know, being hunted by a fucking saber-tooth tiger or something.
I think that being life or death is like fairly key in like having, all of a sudden your resources are like, we have to perform now.
Yeah.
Like this can't be put off till later.
Yeah. And maybe one's ability to snap in and out of that, maybe a certain person will be naturally a little bit better than someone else. Maybe that's what makes the difference between someone that rises to the occasion and someone that just chokes and like totally gets eaten by whatever is chasing them.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Totally. That's, I remember being at a party once, just like, I don't know, just talking to someone I just met, and I don't know, just like saying things that were whatever, and he was saying something about like judgment, and I was like, I don't really like judge people's lifestyle. And then I just kind of like off the cuff was like, I guess I judge them more by how they respond to stress. Mm-hmm. And he kind of like looked at me like, oh, how are you judging me now? And I was like, oh, is that a heavy thing I just said? And I sort of was like, oh, and now I was like, I guess if it, because it is the moment when I'm like interested, like, okay, this is a stressful thing. Like you're put in a tough situation. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Like, those are always the moments when, like, I'm sort of, like, often most pleased with myself. I'll be, like, kind of bored with, like, how I addressed something or how I did something. And then it's like, oh, God, I have to. Like, mm-hmm. did I nail it or not? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's sort of, like, the most, it's kind of the important moment. Like, I think, as I just said, most, like, cool. And I kind of have this imagination of, like, how can I be in that state? Not I specifically, but, like, how can that state be... how can you extract value from that and do that kind of all the time? Mm-hmm. Maybe, and perhaps that would be hard to balance, but I sort of always imagine like a railroad, a train's going along a rail and it has friction along that rail. Mm-hmm. And eventually that friction, it's like this mechanical process that's like propelling it forward, and the friction's going to build up and there's going to be wear and tear and a thing's going to weigh down. But then they have these like kind of magnetic rails they've created.
Maglev.
Yeah, the maglev. Yeah. And it's like suspended where there's no physical friction on the train. So the train has, I like imagining that as like, it's got this like sort of yin-yang balance of like, charges where it's like found this way to react, mm-hmm. or not found this way. I mean, they created the right magnetism. Yeah. And it's the system that works without friction. It's using like natural ability for a thing to float. And so it's way more sustainable. It's sort of staying in this state of like, kind of, I'm going to say like heightened potential or something.
No, it is. It's super interesting. I guess the electromagnets that they use are a lot more complicated than the just electrical rail system. Yeah. So maybe that's where it makes up for being this like amazing floating train.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I know in your analogy, it's like perfect. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and like sort of looking at systems, it's like, okay, how can we, just use like Los Angeles as an easy example, like driving. Like, you know, if you really think about it, probably not the most efficient way to like get a large population around a city. Like everyone has their own like expensive vehicle, lots of potential for messing up, you know, versus like an organized like public transit thing, you know, stuff like that. Like it's sort of like what system is more like sustainable or efficient, and sort of looking at like which ones are, like which has less friction involved, like less potential for falling. And I guess I'm always in, when I'm saying that, I'm thinking about how molecules arrange themselves and like are more related by like charges. I know it's not a magnetic charge, but it's still like an electric potential sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's related. Very closely related.
And sort of using that as a model for how to sustain oneself and move forward. So in thinking about that, I'm thinking like flamenco guitarist. Like they're just these dudes who are just like masters who have like trained on this instrument forever and just can like flow like no other. Like I just hear that and I'm like, damn, like that guy's flying.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to play a little bit of that to like imagine that he's just on this like, maglev train just riding along. So I'm Manitas de Plata, who I was introduced to, like my friend had the CD of his and on the back it had a blurb and it was like from Picasso or something. And it was like, this man is a greater artist than I'll ever be. And I was like, damn, that's an endorsement, like, and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, play a little bit of that and just, like, yeah, imagine him flying across. He's a train.
No friction.
No friction. There's, like, nothing stopping him.
Yeah.
And I think it sounds tight. So I want to play a little bit of that.
So that is the perfect example of what we were talking about a little bit before. And it is, if you look at your brain-body-instrument relationship, your brain has an idea of what it wants to do, tells your body, and your body sort of just finds what's next and what sounds right, and it tries and express what your brain is telling it. But then once you become this fluent master, it's like eliminating the middleman, right?
Yeah.
And so that is super interesting to me. Your brain sort of just calms the fuck down, and your body just lets go, and it just expresses what it wants. And there's no middleman, there's no hesitation, there's no finding, you know, what is right or thinking about technique. It is just pure, like, musical expression, or even, you know, any sort of art, just yeah, straight without a middleman. And that's yeah, tight as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. It's being like, this is necessary. Like, my brain knows what is necessary and my body can do it. Like, I don't have to worry.
You don't have to think about it. Yeah. And I think, like, the best art is made in that little window, and that yeah, window of expression that we talked about, where you just eliminate the body or the middleman, you yeah, know?
And to comment on that, there, Bill Evans, pianist, who's very, like, I don't know, I definitely wouldn't have paid attention to him for a lot of my life because it was just, like, this kind of, like, mellow jazz stuff that I was like, whatever. And then kind of, like, got interested in him later, found out how much he's improvising. And I found this video where he has this kind of brief comment on that. So this is, like, in 1970 when free jazz was becoming a thing. And people are like, well, they definitely don't have a middleman between, like, what they're thinking and doing. But, like, what do we think about that?
Mm-hmm.
I figured I'd play, like, a clip of someone asking him in an interview, like, what he thinks of that, just to weigh in on the discussion.
And your opinion about this avant-garde jazz?
I think it's there's a very healthy thing going on. I don't think it's gotten organized enough yet, maybe. The only thing that I think is a danger about allowing yourself all of this freedom is that you could sometimes indulge yourself and express feelings that are too personal, I mean too everyday personal feelings that might not relate to another person. And I think that you have to be very careful to have an aesthetic guiding force if you allow yourself this kind of a freedom, and also be very selective about the feelings that you want to express, because otherwise you could get as subjective as an infant that's crying in his crib, and no one can deny that this infant is expressing himself, but no one would call it art.
I was very lucky.
It's like, I think he's making, I don't know, you know, a pretty simple point.
Yeah.
Just sort of like, like, yeah, that's cool that you've, like, mastered eliminating that filter. And, like, that's interesting. Like, I feel like people are... But he's saying, basically, like, doesn't mean I have to be interested in it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is something to think about. Like, I've definitely thought about that a lot. And I think a lot of musicians have come up with solutions. Like, his was to have, like, an aesthetic force guiding it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of like that. Like, some sort of, like, idea. Not just, like, I want to do something, but I know what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what he's saying. Like, a baby crying is total expression, but with no direction, with no planned out just pathway that you plan on taking. Or, you know, everything, you can improv all you want, but if you don't know what you're doing with it, then it sounds like shit. Or it could, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, maybe that's what you're going for.
Yeah.
And I definitely have ended up thinking about that a lot, where I'll watch a lot of improvisation and be like, man, do these people not know that, like, improvisation can be good? Or, like, can, yeah, like, have ideas in it? Like, it's not simply the act of, like, doing whatever and
yeah,
being like, someone else will think about this later. Like,
yeah, and I used to think about that. I thought about this a long time ago when I would go to a lot of, like, noise shows, and I'd be like, okay, I'm listening to noise, but this fool sucks and this fool's really tight. And
yeah,
I was like, what's the difference? Because it's both noise. And it's just obvious, man. It's just obvious that, you know, it's even when you're making some sort of harsh noise, it's like, you know, this fool knows their equipment and does really well and has a plan. And this person's literally just fucking making noise. And
yeah,
it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's annoying.
I love being even like having to think about it, being like, it's hard to put your finger on why it sucks,
mm-hmm.
or like why it's good, but that to have to like define it in the moment, because like, especially if they're doing something like original, you know, it's like, oh, cool. I haven't been trained how to think about this.
But there's certain things that are just obvious, you know, and it's like, it's the same as, you know, I can watch a really abstract painter and he or she could be painting like fucking whatever.
Yeah.
But doesn't matter if I know exactly what they're painting or their image, it matters their relationship to their tools and like how confident they are with their tools and their strokes and how precise they are.
Yeah.
Because same thing in like drone or noise, it's still precise. You know, it's still a planned like progression of music.
Yeah.
And when it's not, you can tell that it sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I definitely really like finding musicians who I'm like, damn, you like have some control over that. Because I feel like I can, when I hear like a noise musician doing something, then it's, I can like feel the anxiety in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll be like, man, I feel like I'm just watching you be like nervous and unsure and like, and it's not that fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's sort of like, I'm not getting that much out of it because I feel like you're just sort of like nervous and...
And I mean, that happens to all musicians. You know, if you see anybody, if you see someone playing classical piano and they're nervous and not precise, it totally sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And so like, I'm always excited when I find stuff that's like out there and doing something unusual, but I'm like, wow, I can just feel that kind of nail it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I brought in a tape of that I think kind of does that well. This dude, Christopher Robert Jones, and it's like a pretty short piece. It's just like one side of a tape. And I don't know. Yeah, it's just some sort of like electronic stuff he put together with like various samples. And it's like, I've seen him play where it'll be, he did something. It's like, I guess part of my confidence in it is that I've seen him like reproduce this sort of feeling multiple times. Like he'll always have this sort of like quietness with this like tension where he's like, he'll like have samples of him playing like a violin, he's like barely touching it. Or he like played with a bass and was like barely touching it. And I was like, damn, it's pretty badass. Like this really gentle thing. So I kind of wanted to play that real quick and kind of come back to this. I'll transition to it from Manitas. Yo te encuentro llorar.
Eso familia, eso familia.
So yeah, might just be me, but that shit has me on the edge of my seat. That's sort of a, I don't know, just like, it's like going from thing to thing and like almost failing every time. Like being about to get knocked off of your like nearness to achieving your thing. It reminds me, man, I wanted to always reference that it's like the only anime show I've watched thoroughly since being a kid, Full Metal Alchemist. It was like this thing where they always come up against ridiculous means, like this will end you, and somehow use their creativity and resources to persevere, mm-hmm. and find answers to unanswerable foes. And I don't know, that sort of piece kind of reminds me of that momentum. Persisting beyond what you think. And I guess that's, to me, a lot of what that sort of more free noise, free jazz thing is like, look, I know this doesn't sound like anything right now, but we're going to keep going until it does sound like something. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to find a logic within it, which I suppose could be the, that's, I don't know. Do you fuck with John Cage much,
Steven? Yeah, I used to, like a long time ago.
He's definitely like, yeah, he's just got good quotes about, like, if you don't like a thing, like, think about it for 2 minutes. If you don't like it, like, or, like, listen to it for 4 minutes, then listen to it for 8. And, like, basically just saying, like, if you don't like it, just keep listening to it. Mm-hmm. And eventually, like, figure out something interesting about it.
Yeah, you'll have some sort of understanding of it.
And I guess you could say that about thinking about a thing. Like, if you don't like it, like, someone or something, like, keep thinking about it, and eventually you'll, like, figure out a way to incorporate it into your world, which may be, like, I incorporate into my world by avoiding it.
Yeah.
Like, perhaps.
Yeah. Absolute same.
Yeah, being like, okay, this is sort of done. Like, I don't need to talk about that. In the background, we've got Bill Orcutt playing. A guitarist who I think does a good job of sort of, now that I think about it, bridge that gap between flamenco guitarist and electronic noise musician. Or he's a dude who's kind of going more from that principle of non-traditional organizations of music and sort of inventing his own way of moving forward on an acoustic guitar. So I think he's tight. And he's actually, I've seen in interviews, he talks a lot about like tics, like people with nervous tics, and he'll sort of like look at videos of that for his music, and I sees it as people who kind of can't help themselves, I mm-hmm. guess, like they're just acting completely without thinking, and just like what comes out of that, that mm-hmm. like burst of energy. So he's like, that's his way of like not overthinking. I've only seen him play with people. It was like all, he's like an older dude, like more like a father. And he'll play with other musicians who are like all like Mills College graduates, like dudes who have thought a lot, like definitely done the studied composition thing. And I remember seeing them play in Oakland. Now it's getting wild. And all these guys like kind of going on forever doing stuff that's like kind of like conceptually interesting. I'm like, cool, you like made this instrument, like that's cool, and you're doing, and like that's cool, but like it wasn't cool for an hour. Like you did some interesting things and then sort of just like repeated yourself and like kept going for like an hour, and I got pretty bored. Like it was cool if you had kept it short. And I really appreciated that Bill Orcutt was like the headliner, and he played for like maximum 15 minutes.
That's tight.
And I was like, wow, you just were like so much better than everyone else. Because it wasn't just like, you weren't like, I'm just going to be here and show you that I can play guitar. It's like, I'm just going to be here as long as I think what I'm doing is interesting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, not push it.
It's always better to like leave someone wanting more than to leave someone wishing you would stop playing.
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely sort of like the worst state, because their imagination could fill in the rest of it.
which is
good. And we were kind of touching on this earlier, but not getting quite into it. I was realizing a lot of this sort of like not thinking and like the benefits of it is like the Dionysian side of things, which is a term I say kind of jokingly, because I only realized that it's like a basic tenet of like Nietzsche stuff, like much later in life. And so I was just kind of like laughing myself for like, I don't know, I feel like a teenager applying it so heavily to things. However, it just kind of fits into this, of like the idea of like the god of wine and party was an important part of Greek culture, and integrating that into everyday practices. Like when I first learned about kava tea, that stuff that like, I don't know, kind of like supposed to relax you, have to be like 18 to buy. It was like this. Societies that used it would take that before meetings, so they would just be honest with each other, because they're like, look, let's not make important decisions if we're all just going to be sitting here bullshitting each other and like pretending we're doing interesting, like we're being honest. Let's like be honest with each other. And their way of accessing that honesty was like, stop thinking so much. Like, don't think to the point that you're going to manipulate me with what you're saying. Like, let it all out.
That might be what's wrong with the world today.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's like...
yeah. The House, like, House of Representatives would just have a little wine once in a while.
On the clock.
Yeah, on the clock, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
That's sort of, the over-engineering. I guess maybe that's really a way to think about it. It's sort of like, it's a tendency to sort of over-engineer, to be like, we can logically figure out, like, we can... Like, I guess this belief that you can rationally arrive at... like truly rational conclusions through this like careful engineering, because we've accomplished tons of cool shit by doing that, like creating infinitely complex machines and like microchips that like double in speed every 18 months or whatever.
Yeah.
And like that's cool, but to apply that to humans who are like, I think like it would be, it's, you know, it's more useful to acknowledge they're like innately irrational beings. And sort of like rolling with that, not like attempting to be like, we can't, it's, I guess I'm just saying like, I don't think it's actually possible for things to be like organized in a truly rational way, which I'm thinking is more rational than rational. I know I'm sort of not making sense in saying that. Do you kind of like,
I follow.
Yeah. Like, I think it's actually irrational to think that you could be truly rational.
Absolutely.
And so by acknowledging that, you're sort of being more rational.
Yeah.
Like facing reality more. Like, for like Manita Stay Plata, if he was to sit there and be like, man, I'm just like gonna hit all these notes perfect. I mean, you kind of can do that. Like Paco de Lucia kind of is a little bit more of that kind of flamenco guitarist.
But he also is like, you know, but at the same time, he's still like flowing with emotion. And, you know, you can be precise with where you're hitting it, but it's also like the intensity that you hit something.
Yeah.
And that is like pure flow of emotion.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And because that really is it. I mean, that's really what I'm kind of hoping to get to in this show was basically like how that can be applied. Like, okay, this seems useful.
Well, we talked about the brain, you know, kind of just dropping out and letting your body do the work and more of a reactive state or in like your subconscious understanding of like the universe around you, right? And so we talked about that, like reactionary, you know, in a reactionary context. But I think it's like the zone, what, you know, how people say like in the zone or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. And it seems like that window is very prevalent for artists too.
Definitely.
And so like in that same window where your brain sort of just drops out and the electrical signals just calm the fuck down, right? That is where a lot of beautiful shit is created, right? So that's where that little window is where creation is like the most fluent and like fluid.
And wouldn't it be cool if everything came out of that state?
Absolutely.
I suppose. I mean, like, I like imagining that world. Like, I think I like architects that seem to operate in that way where, because there's architects who are like, okay, here's the dimensions, here's the square footage I need, here's a building. And you're like, cool, that's a building and it works. But it's not beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe it is, but like, I don't know. It's easy to say that it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same. It's like it's this difference between mass production of something that works and like some creating something that is sort of reactionary. So if you're going to build a building that's beautiful, you probably want to look at the surrounding lay of the, you know, the land that you're going to build it on and have some sort of reactionary approach to where it should go, what you're doing, the dimensions of it to fit what it's sitting on top of, you know?
And I think acknowledging that it, like, that sort of everything is reacting to something in part, you know, you're like deriving it yourself, but it's, you know, like what, like an object in motion stays in motion unless acted upon or stays not in motion, you know, like,
and that's
there's
what
something
I was gonna
acting.
Say. Yeah, like, and so the zone that we're talking about getting in for an artist is totally reactionary. So if you're a writer and everybody's done it, you like fall into this zone and next thing you know, you have fucking, you know, 12 pages that you've written. Well, that is totally like one consistent act of reacting to what you've written before. And so you're just choosing all these different pathways. Same with like a musician, you know, you're writing and then it's sort of a reaction to what you wrote 10 seconds ago, where it's going to go and what avenue you choose to take it on. And it's this zone of constant reaction and boom, maybe that's it.
Yeah. I really do think it is. And like instantly when I think of reaction and because I think a lot of people feel like that takes away some like agency or autonomy. Like they think of themselves as reacting and I don't think it does. It's sort of like, well, just acknowledging what you're reacting to informs your ability to react. Like if you know what, like, why am I so angry? Well, like, if you can figure out why you're angry, then you, like, suddenly have more control over that anger. Like, because you're reacting no matter what, but if you, like, know what you're reacting to, and you can, like, think about it comfortably, like, without stressing, like, then it's a good thing. And, yeah, I think, and I always think of, like, the whole, like, God, I'm probably going to bring this up, like, every show, you know, the yin-yang balance. Like, it's two sides reacting to each other, being like, hey, you're the opposite of me, I'm the opposite of you, but we, like, have to... We have to acknowledge that we both exist.
I mean, yeah, it's always like, good to like when necessary to like kick in your logic side of your brain and your deductive reasoning, and because it fucking sucks and is so annoying when people don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's sometimes like, man, I wish you. Yeah, because when people just react, oftentimes they have annoying reactions. Like
Absolutely.
You were saying that guy in the grocery store the other day. It was like. Steven was telling me this dude, I don't know, you were in an aisle.
Yeah, I was like standing in an aisle, me and my friend were talking, totally normal, like there's totally enough room, and some rich fool was like, just felt like he had to make a comment while he was totally walking by us, but he was like, you're in the way, like, or he's like, kind of in the way, and I was like, well, it seems to me like you just found your way around, so you can basically shut the fuck up,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was, he reacted to me very negatively and asked me if I worked here, and I reacted to him saying, no, I don't. So you can't talk to my boss, dude. We're just two fools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that guy had an annoying reaction. And I really like the idea of training a culture to not have annoying reactions. That's like, you know, on like the underlying thing of like most things I think about is like, man, how could I get everyone in the world to suck less?
Yeah.
So, and but like in a way where I'm not deciding what sucks and what doesn't, just like I think we can find some like objective things that like kind of suck. Like being a dick to someone. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like kind of saying this like with my tongue in my cheek, knowing that like to say objective ways of not sucking is subjective.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of ways to be. And a lot of times it's figuring out what expressing yourself in one way means. And I'm saying that because I sort of want to finish this program on this. Don't have time for the whole song, but there's this Abby Lincoln and Max Roach pieces that are these really cool videos, and they play this music that's like this very composed, controlled stuff, but then they'll have these moments where they'll just like Max Roach will just start kind of doing whatever on the drums, and Abby Lincoln, they were married at the time, like starts yelling. Mm-hmm. And there's this interview with her like later in life where they're like how did you, like, he's like asking her about the yelling. Like, this dude's asking her about the yelling. And he's actually, like, being a little bit annoying about it, I think. And she has, like, a really cool answer to, like, how she, like, learned to, like, put meaning to it and sort of give structure to this thing that, as Bill Evans was describing, like, may sound like just, like, an infant, you know, yelping.
Yeah.
And, like, not doing something interesting. So I thought maybe we play her talking about that and kind of play out that part of the music where she does that. Yeah, you know, and I think we can conclude the show being we thought about some things and hopefully are putting some structure into some ideas, because I think that's honestly kind of the key is like if you can find a structure within to put these moments of insight where beautiful things come out of, then they can build into something and not be the stereotypical like kind of harebrained mess of pure
shit.
Inspiration.
Yeah.
And like organize something into like, how can I understand that which seems perhaps all over the place and uncontrolled and unuseful, but in fact has quite a bit of value. So I'm gonna try this out.
You know, I finally learned to scream was my little nephew. He was 8 years old.
Yeah.
We were on our way to a concert, and Max said to him, scream for Abby, Daryl, because she doesn't know how to scream. And Daryl screamed this wonderful, loud sound. And he said to Max, but you see, Uncle Max, I can scream louder than Abby because I'm a little boy, and babies can scream louder than me, and Aunt Abby can scream louder than you. And it freed me up. I knew what the screams were for. It's for protection,
yeah.
For anybody's protection, but especially a woman's. But for me, I come from a family of women and men, but nobody ever screamed. If anything was a problem, they would take something to defend themselves.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.